Vegas lights shine bright, bad boys sitting pretty. Michael, Steve, Rob running things in Sin City. Podcast blazing truth, rhyming hard and witty. Three kings on the mic, Vegas life gets gritty. Matt Michaels dropping bombs, quick wit, no filter. Sin City's own, blending gold with the silver. Steve taking notes, every word's a thriller. Rob's on the tracks, beats cold like a chiller. Bad boys a podcast, raw truth they broadcast. Speaking facts so fast, haters coming dead last. Las Vegas legends, three amigos top class. Mic in hand, setting fire, never outclassed.
Welcome, everybody, to the Sin City Indie Report right here on the Vegas Bad Boys Podcasting Network. I am Sin City Steve, and as always, I'm being joined by Red Jed from his corner of the internet. Jed, how the hell are you, my friend?
Indeed. Yo, what up, everybody? It is your masked friendly neighborhood luchador, Red Jed, coming back to live, ladies and gentlemen.
Hell yeah, man. Hell yeah. It's been quite a week, man. Ooh. You know, it's crazy. Obviously, we did a lot of watching wrestling this week. There were a lot of things that went down on the strip. We saw a lot of different styles of wrestling. And it just goes to show that I gotta say, the only thing more dangerous than deathmatch spots are parking fees on the strip.
Oh, fucking right. No kidding.
Yeah. But anyway, let's just jump in. We got tons of ground to cover. And what a better way to start than with a promotion that was a first time watch for me, probably Same. For you as well, if I had to put money on it. Yep. And this was World Series Wrestling coming to us live. They did a touring kind of a run on May 15th, 16th, 17th, and 18th. And man, I will tell you, you see the graphic on the screen. You got Nick Nemeth, Moose, Bishop Dyer, Killer Cross, Scarlett, Matt Riddle, Priscilla Kelly. I mean, a great, great list. Incredibly talented individuals. You got the Good Brothers, Shotzi, Man Like DeReese. I mean, you've got a great lineup. And I got to say, dude, consistently, four nights of extremely entertaining stuff. And I think I just now got fucking Chelsea Dagger by the Fratellis out of my head.
No shit. Oh, wow. Was that a moment? A couple times around on these shows. My God. Yeah. Where do you start with these shows? A really solid group, a touring group for a four-night show.
Yeah.
I thought, whoever got the talent in for this show, man, nice variety from different organizations, different parts of the country, different types of styles with some of these competitors. And they did a lot of like switching up of matches, you know, night to night, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what you thought, but I had a personal favorite of the four, probably with the Sydney show. What mm-hmm. was your thoughts?
Yep. You know, it's funny. I think that was my consensus as well. Yeah. And dare I say, they probably just seemed to let it kind of hang out a little bit more. And, you know, they, I don't want to say that they sandbagged any of the other nights by any means,
right?
But that Sydney night, that was, yeah, dude,
there's something special about that one. Yeah.
Yeah. It just felt like they were doing something big, like almost as if this tour is really what's going to help World Series Wrestling kind of break through. And I think that was evidenced by all of the viral clips. Yeah. Realistically speaking, I saw footage from night one and I didn't really think that I would show a great interest in covering all four nights, but then I saw the clips of everybody seeming to just have a blast. And obviously it's one thing to go out there, kill it in the ring, and put on a great show, but you could tell that they were having fun and that they enjoyed what they did. That was infectious across all four nights of this show, of this tour. But yeah, man, I gotta say that Sydney night was great. I think, and I'll put the graphic back up here. I believe it was night three, the 17th, night two in Melbourne.
Yeah.
It was also a great, great experience too. But dude, you saw things like, for instance, I made a joke about the Fratellis and Chelsea Dagger. That was a theme for one of the local teams there, the Dropouts. Yeah. And
holy cow,
dude, the thing is, you saw it too. Night one, yeah, they had about half the people, you know, singing along with the song and doing the finger movements.
Yep.
Then by night four, everybody did it because they ran it back numerous times. Yep. But dude, they really broke through, dare I say. Also, shout out to local favorite and local legend Killer Cross for becoming the new WSW World Heavyweight Champion, defeating Bishop Dyer on night one there. And that kind of set the tone for the rest of the tour. Cross crushed it. And that's not taking anything away. Donovan Dijak, I think he had a really good showing for himself as well. Yep. Unfortunately, Dyer got injured. I believe it was night two.
Yeah.
So he only was able to really go for one night. And that was the initial night.
Yeah.
But people like Man Like DeReese continue to set themselves apart too. He's somebody, quite frankly, I was not familiar with before the WrestleMania week shows in Vegas. Yeah. And he was on damn near every show that we went to.
Yeah.
Dude was having a great time. That was infectious. And it just carried over into this tour. And I think that we're going to see the rest of 2026 being a great time for Man Like DeReese.
Oh, yeah, man. And interesting with him, particularly on these shows, it seemed like every match that he was on these shows, they gave him like almost a half hour in every one of his matches. I thought, wow, there is something to be said there. He had a lot of time in his particular bouts. I think another person that stood out was Myla Grace on the women's side. Absolutely. You know, she came across like a – I don't ever remember seeing her as a heel. She had been in TNA as a babyface for quite some time, but I thought this new persona of hers kind of like felt a little bit like Liv Morgan with some vibes there.
That's a good call out, yeah.
Yeah, but I think I worked for her. I thought she stood out much more than I had ever seen her stand out in TNA, and she actually got a slight transitional deal where she beat Ash Biello against, I think, on the third night and then lost it back to her on the fourth.
Yep.
But yeah, there was little like shine moments on these shows during this tour where some talent really stood out. And you called it too with Crossman. He was like the anchor pretty much of all these shows in the main events.
Absolutely, dude. Yeah. It's great to see what Cross can do outside of WWE. Yeah. Those of us locally, we knew that he was a very special talent, and now the wrestling world is continuing to see it. Obviously he's the champion, in WSW, as we had mentioned. He's also the champion in ACW Awesome Championship Wrestling that we're going to talk about here in a bit. Great stuff right now with Killer Cross. Shotzi also had a pretty solid tour, as well as Priscilla Kelly.
Yeah, they had back-to-backs on night three and four. They had I think the first match wasn't so much of a hardcore match. The last night certainly was taking it to another level between those two. And I loved how the announcers really brought up actually the history of those two in matches in total. Mm-hmm. So we told a story in those couple of matches where by the Sydney show, they were, I believe they said, tied in their, you know, history of their matches that they've had together. So I loved that too. I just thought the production was top to bottom excellent. The announcing, the production, the crowds, the venues. I mean, this was aptly, I would call it a home run for World Series Wrestling all around for this tour.
Absolutely. And of note, they will be doing this same type of a setup in November. So
Mega Mania, I believe, right?
Yeah, yeah. And so this is, I guess, the approach that they take is obviously, you know, it's May now. So yeah. they do shows typically every 6 months where they're going to tour all around Australia. I like this type of a setup because it does allow you to pull from various promotions. I mean, you know, the Good Brothers in there, the Nemeth Brothers in there, Matt Riddle, you know, it allowed for some really interesting matches that quite honestly, I didn't know that I wanted to see until I saw them on the card.
For sure. And I think the biggest, you know, there was a big surprise. I believe it was actually the first night Buddy Matthews showed up.
Matthews showed up, curb stomped. Was it Dijak?
Dijak, yeah. So where are they going to go? That maybe he's already been signed for the next tour. Just begs the question. So.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And it's great to see Buddy out there getting physical, you know, hitting a curb stomp. He was very limited in his action, but this is a great sign. It's good to see that he is recovered and that he should be ready to go. So AEW, look out.
Yep, he's getting there, and he was yoked, let me tell you.
Absolutely to the fucking gills, bro.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Oof.
Yeah.
He's been to spend time in the gym, man. Yeah, here we go. Look at this.
Absolutely. Right here. This was the closing image from night four. You got Shotzi pouring out the beer onto Priscilla Kelly's ass, and Scarlett Bordeaux is drinking the beer, luge style. Matt Riddle looks absolutely elated. Cross is losing his mind, and Moose can't believe his eyes.
Oh man, yeah. So yeah, that's what I liked about that Sydney show too. Everything felt like a big blow off.
Yeah.
You know, like some of the matches had a bit of a blow off feel to it, especially that Shotzi, Priscilla Kelly thing, the Myla Grace and Ash by Elegance rematch. Nemeth and Cross felt like a bigger type of main event mania style for this tour. And then how everybody at the end just came in and like celebrated together as the show concluded and the tour concluded. It was more of like a celebratory, like kind of final bow on the present of this tour. So very cool.
Absolutely. And you know, it takes it back to like, if anybody listening has been involved in any kind of a theater production or like maybe a music session where you're doing a tour. So this really felt like a close knit camaraderie that these guys had. And, you know, some names you might not expect to have, you know, gotten along or whatever the situation is. But yeah, it looked like everybody had fun. And at the end of the day, that's the name of the game, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Just everybody came, you know, it was a small crew, I would say 20 workers total in all the shows, you know, and then you intermix some of the Australian talent in there to give them a glimpse of a kind of where they're from and what they're doing. And yeah, nice balance. Loved this tour.
Absolutely, man. And well, obviously we just got done talking about four separate shows by one company. Let's talk now about three shows from one company. Oh, yeah. And we're talking about Game Changer Wrestling. They brought shows on May 15th, 16th, and 17th. So up first was Guilty Conscience. And this one came to us from Detroit, Michigan. Yeah, man. What stood out to you about this show?
Yeah, I have to say overall with the GCW shows, just to preface before I throw down some thoughts on this was a great, solid three-show weekend for GCW.
Yes, man. Absolutely.
All these shows killed it, in my opinion.
Yeah,
So standing out on this one, a few of them, Joey Janela over the weekend started out on this show by putting over a lot of talent that I did not expect. And it started on this show with Teriyaki, which was awesome, man. I did not see that coming. So Joey Janela's really taking a step back and getting talent over like he can in this company right now. And he's putting his best foot forward with it. So that was awesome. The Vipress and Allison Kay match went well beyond what I expected anything out of
no
a match
shit.
Like Allison Kay, I would have never seen in a match like that.
And and of all things, she introduced a fucking machete to the match.
You're right. Like, holy shit.
Now, obviously, there were no real machete spots. Allison Kay went for, you know, the thrusting, the machete thrust. And, you know, thankfully, Viperous got out of the way. So it impaled the top turnbuckle for a bit. But, yeah. I mean, you know, the unpredictability of it. And like you said, you wouldn't have thought Allison Kay being involved in a hardcore type of an environment. Yeah. And she goes and brings out a fucking machete.
Yeah, and she did a bump through glass too on top.
Yes,
of it. So,
yes, both of those women did bumps through panes of glass, mm-hmm. and plenty of glass bumps.
Speaking of glass, we might as well. That's a perfect transition to the main event, which was John Wade Murdoch and Slade.
Oh my God!
Fuck me, running, dude!
Holy shit, dude!
Christ! Oh, this was just. If there was such term as masturbatory in terms of light tubes, holy fucking hell. This match was excessive in that level. It just a sea of glass on the canvas as they were bumping. These guys were cut up from fucking head to toe. I have never remember seeing a GCW event that ended so abruptly with after the finish, both guys were like barely moving. There was selling going on, but I think it was more than just your typical sell. John Wade Murdoch was limping and like bent over and got the fuck out after this match.
He bounced, man.
He was hurt. He's like, I need to get checked right the fuck now.
Yeah.
I'm not wasting any fucking time here. Fuck celebrating anything. This hurts.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that it really, we talked about people that set themselves apart. Obviously I've seen Slade wrestle tons of times, but the fact is, dude, he had a fucking performance in that match.
He sure did.
The way that he obviously no-sold, they made the guy look like a fucking killer.
Yeah.
He took, I'd say easily over 100 light tubes to the fucking face.
Yep.
Dude, and literally his entire torso was covered in blood.
Oh, it was just, it was graphic.
It wasn't just like where it had mixed with sweat either. It was caked.
It was blood. Just a pool on him, of blood. It was just, he was like wearing a blood vest, essentially.
That's a great call.
Yeah, goddamn. And his forehead was just fucked beyond recognition. It's all back of his head, everything, man. It was a bloodbath that I have not seen in quite some time. And this is a high level in GCW, but this one took some sort of cake, so to speak, on this night. I'll tell you,
absolutely, man. You know this card had damn near all death matches or all weapons-based matches because obviously we had the ultra-violent championship on the line. Matt Tremont defending against Anakin Murphy.
Yep.
Dude.
That was a great tip match too, man.
They did a great job in telling a story.
They sure did.
It wasn't just about the violence. Obviously, you know, you mentioned masturbatory violence earlier, but I think that they did tell a serious story in this match as well. And you can see that GCW, they are looking to the future. They're trying to build new stars, which is very smart, especially with the type of wrestling that they feature. They need to keep a constant rotation of people that are at the top of their card.
And so Anakin Murphy kind of got a lot of shine, not just in this match, but over the weekend too. There was an effort to really get him over for the deathmatch tournament as well. So there's like a leveling up type of thing going on with him. It seems like no question about it. And this was just, even though I believe Anakin Murphy lost that match,
he
was the star. And Matt Tremont made a point of it after the match too.
Dude, that is so one thing that is very apparent is Matt Tremont will be that guy to beat the absolute fuck out of you in a match, But then if he feels that you gave it your all, he will be the first person to pick you up, raise your hand, and put you over after the match.
Yep. It's kind of a litmus test. If you can get through Tremont, and if you show up against Matt Tremont, you're going to get put over, even if you're not, you know, actually pinning Matt Tremont for the finish. So
absolutely. Yep. And let's turn over now to the second show of GCW, Gateway to the Death. This one came to us from Illinois, but it was pretty close to St. Louis. So obviously they played up the whole Gateway to the West with the name of the show. And yeah, dude, Lil fucking Sicko is who stood out to me from this show. And again, Joey Janela.
Yeah.
Putting people over, going to great lengths to do that. I think that he is vastly underappreciated in professional wrestling, especially with what he's done the last year, not just in 2026, but the last 12 months. Joey Janela has done a lot of great things for this business, and you can say whatever you will about his tactics, but his mind is in the right place, and he gets it. He absolutely gets it, which is phenomenal.
Yeah, he really put Little Sickle over in this match. The match itself was like a wild encounter. I mean, Little Sickle was doing some insane spots. Janela was just giving him those moments at every corner of this match, and really, really impressed with that one. Again, we just mentioned Anakin Murphy. He got put over really strong in this show as well.
Literally, he faces Matt Tremont one day and then John Wayne Murdoch the next. It's like,
right.
What the fuck, man? What a hellacious gauntlet.
Right. And then I believe he was from the St. Louis area they mentioned too. So they played that up also. So really good presentation there. The match with Slade and Barrett Bronson, speaking of another talent that
absolutely
really looked great over the weekend, Bang and Matthews was against Barrett Bronson, who looked awesome as well with Slade. That whole match was very heated. The crowd was lightning fucking hot for that match from start to finish. Holy fuck, man. Yeah, and then on the flip side, we had Nixie XS and Shazza McKenzie.
Yeah.
Which was, if there was a Kerplunk of the week, I think that would probably be it on anything.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't like to bury too much on this show, but not the best night. you know, you can call it timing issues, you could call it a lack of chemistry, whatever the situation was. Not the best showing. Obviously both women are skilled workers, so it has to be just a chemistry thing or a timing thing between them. So I'm sure it's just a one-off, but man, as you had mentioned, you know, with Bear Bronson, I have to put this out there. Who knew that one of the best things to happen to that guy would be to get fired or have his contract run out from AEW?
No kidding. I mean, my God, look at what he's done since he left.
Yeah.
I can't say I've been super impressed with his TNA run. That's no fault of his own, but
that's what I was going to say too. You can't really fault him for that.
Yeah.
You have to look at his individual efforts in TNA. And then also obviously what he's done in GCW is fucking insane.
Yeah,
definitely establishing an identity for sure.
Yep, no question. Yeah, he's going to be – I wouldn't be shocked if he won Tournament of Survival this year. I just feel like the crowd's with him. He could be a guy that you could move up even into that area to challenge Colger
for
the GCW title following that. So we'll see where they go.
Absolutely, man. And obviously – you know, Viperous continues to do extremely good things too. I've got to put her over and talk about the things that she has done. You know, obviously Jimmy Lloyd is a GCW mainstay. That guy is the freaking heart and soul of GCW. But Viperous is on a run right now, and it's great to see, because obviously making the gimmick shift that she did, ever since she's done that, she also has established a new identity for herself.
Yeah. Yeah. She's another one of these talents that they got an eye on. They're going to move her up. They're actively doing it. And again, moving back to Koger, there's another challenger you could put in the mix, and she could easily have a world championship run in GCW, and fans would eat that shit up.
I love that idea. I hadn't even thought about that.
Yeah.
But, you know, realistically, who's to say that she doesn't win Tournament of Survival?
She could. They've really pushed it. So,
and then go on to defeat Koger for that championship.
Yeah. Yeah, either Bronson or Viperous, go for it. Yeah, who knows? Maybe they'll be in the finals against each other. One shot.
Oh, dude, that would be fucking great.
Ooh, buddy, hello.
Damn.
Yeah, man.
And then let's talk about the third show of three from GCW on the weekend, and Ring of Dreams. You know, man, I hadn't mentioned his name once since we've been talking about GCW, but Atticus Koger. I think that he is somebody that, yes, he's the world champion, but he is very good in the ring in terms of psychology and planning things out. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that gets overlooked with him quite a bit, because again, people just see the skewers and they see the, you know, the gussets and, you know, all the deathmatch stuff. But, you know, I think that Atticus is, during the Mania 41 weekend, there was some buzz around him with WWE ID. And that stuff has obviously kind of faded. But I think that we're starting to see, you know, him doing a bit of fleshing out of his character. And it's definitely a welcome sight to see.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That match with Manders was really well laid out.
Dude.
I thought there was a really strong story being told there. Yeah. The near falls were fantastic. How the commentators got involved. Many layers and like kind of a roller coaster of a match as a whole. And then they did the angle the night before as well in St. Louis, setting it up a little bit too. I kind of get to play certainly into this match big time with
them. Oh, yeah.
So,
oh, yes.
Yeah, kudos to whoever booked that in GCW the way it did over the weekend. I thought really told a nice arc of a story there.
Absolutely, man. Yeah. You know, the thing that I have to mention too is they got me. They absolutely got me. Same. Because I thought for sure that Manders was winning this championship.
Me too, the way that
they were in Iowa, which is where he's from. Yep. They had his trainer come out, friend of the Vegas Bad Boys podcast network, Merrick Brave. We did a great interview with him several years ago. Feel free after this show to go back and listen to that. But yeah, seeing all that stuff, in my mind, they did an excellent job of deceiving me because I thought for sure Manders was walking out with that championship.
They got me too. I even thought, okay, they did the angle the night before to set it up. So we're supposed to think that maybe he wasn't going to go over, but they're actually going to do it. So they got me hook, line, and sinker on it as well, brother. I thought this was it. And the way that was going, especially with the, like I mentioned, where the announcers even got involved, and it seemed like it was more of an effort of like, let's finally fucking do it into Atticus Koger. And then they brought up the cattle prod and these type of things. And wow, I just thought, okay, here we go. Here we go. And just got that close and Manders didn't get it. But I think the chase is not over. We'll see.
Yeah. No, it's absolutely not over. Yeah. Another thing obviously to mention here, you had mentioned Bear Dozer and Bangin' Matthews. That tag match was just fucking fun to watch, man.
Yeah, they did.
And it goes to show it goes to show that, you know, Bronson and Tremont, they don't just have to do deathmatch shit.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
They can just excel in a tag format. They were brawling all over this ballroom in Des Moines. So the environment-wise of the aesthetic of that match was pretty cool. They were doing spots off the railings of this ballroom and stuff. Really unique setup that they had there. I was there for a Primus concert, gosh, about 10 years ago. So.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool little venue that they got
there. That's awesome, dude.
Yeah.
What's, I'm going to put you on the spot. Favorite Primus song?
Oh, My Name is Mud, probably. Yeah.
Classic, man. You can't ever go wrong.
Oh, yeah.
So, perfect. All right, so let's pivot. And, Jed, talk to me just a bit about Ring of Honor Supercard of Honor. That took place on May 15th, and admittedly, I just did not have enough time to catch this show. I caught the main event. After the fact, people told me that I had to check out that main event between Blake Christian and Bandido. So yep. I did seek it out. Excellent match. Dude, Blake Christian, say whatever you will, he is in the right place in Ring of Honor. Let him continue to do things down there. Yep. And then he will be an excellent piece for AEW in the future.
Yes.
But I think he's best served on Ring of Honor currently.
I agree. Yeah. And he had the breakout match of the show. No question. That was the best match of the show. I think, frankly, one of the best matches he's had in AEW Ring of Honor. Bandito gave him a lot of stuff in this match. A lot of unique spots, a lot of great near falls. Much like the Mander situation, I actually thought for a moment or two in this match that Blake Christian was going over. So they got me, no question about it. I also thought there was going to be a title change in the six-way women's match, the Survival of the Fittest match, which I'd also suggest checking out. Those two world title matches on this card, definitely worth checking out at the end of this show. Athena did continue her reign, but I thought maybe this was going to be the time, but I think it's going to be a while. I think it's very clear where the direction's going to be. If Billy Starks doesn't get this title by the end of this run, whenever this run ends, it'll be a damn shame, because I agree. Feel like that's where it has to be, and that's where it's been for so long. The tease, the setup, the chase, the build, they go back to be aligned, and it's going to happen eventually.
Oh, yeah. There were
definitely teases of this in this match, and a lot of wild spots in that woman's six-way. Also, the other one thing that really stood out to me on this show was the Lio Rush match with Air Fox was also pretty darn good. And the turn by action Andretti on Lio Rush at the end of that match as well. I did not kind of see that coming. He had a match earlier in the night against Sammy Guevara. Action Andretti did. So it kind of set that up a little bit. That Action Andretti was pissed that Lio Rush wasn't out there accompanying him when he took on Sammy Guevara. So there was a little bit of a story told in the evening with that feud now starting up between the former teammates. Other than that, Dalton Castle and the Outrunners won the six-man titles on this show.
Hell yeah.
Overall, a lot of title matches on this show. The Nigel McGuinness match with Josh Woods was pretty darn good. Definitely a solid Ring of Honor, Supercard of Honor this year.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, no question about it.
Awesome, man. Yeah, I'm definitely going to have to go back and check it out. Unfortunately, there was a lot of shit this week and not enough time for me to catch it all. So
yeah, this just got shoehorned in with so much other indie events. I mean, I feel like we barely started on a week that it was this week, man. Woof.
It's craziness, man. Yeah. And, you know, speaking of shows that that I thoroughly enjoyed, Future Stars of Wrestling, Changing the Game, which took place on May 15th from the HyperX at the Luxor here in Las Vegas. And, you know, dude, I've got to tell you, there were some people that set themselves apart on this show and some teams that I didn't know that I wanted to see put together until this show. So we'll start there. Bodhi Young Prodigy and TJP defeated Bryce Saturn and Luke Curtis. BYP is he's going to be a very, very good wrestler, especially if He continues to learn excellent things from TJP, who is one of the core trainers at FSW. Okay. So yeah, for him just being under that, no pun intended, learning tree, I think that he's going to pick up even better things, and he's only going to get better. So excellent, excellent career on the horizon for him. But another younger talent that really kind of set themselves apart, Fox Valentine, who challenged Jaden Cole for the FSW No Limits title. Fox Valentine is a relative new name, and somebody that we haven't talked about on the show here. But if you have the Title Match Network, I would highly recommend going back, checking out this show. It was a very fun, very easy watch. Elsewhere, you had, you know, staples of the FSW tenure of FSW lore, as you had Jay Vidal defeating Gregory Sharp. Sorry, I need finger quotes. Gregory Sharp in an interesting kind of a storyline that Jay Vidal is in an alliance with Tyler Bateman, the FSW heavyweight champion. And knowing those two characters, you might not think that they would, you know, synergize or have an alliance to begin with, but it works. It just works. Bateman continues to be that cold, psychotic, very, very cerebral character that he has always been. And now with the FSW championship, he did defeat Shogun in about 18 minutes. They were building this up. Obviously, Shogun was involved in a near fatal car accident a little over a year ago. And his journey back to the ring has been, honestly, it's been an inspiration for a lot of people, especially here in Las Vegas. So it's good to have Shogun back and in the fold. But he did come up short on the 15th against Bateman. And dude, Live Danger. I gotta make mention of him. They defeated the Pretty City Express, and they stood out Mania Week as one of the brightest spots that we saw. And they're continuing the momentum, dude. I love that, you know, Joe is booking these guys on a very consistent basis, allowing them to showcase their talents, because they're a great tag team. And yeah, they just continue to show that. And obviously we'll talk in a bit about what's going to be dropping next from FSW, as I do have some exclusive news. So stay tuned for that. But yeah, Changing the Game, excellent show. Let's do a bit of a pivot and turn over now. Let's talk about Memphis Wrestling and the Bounty Hunter, Brian Keith, Mike Anthony, and all of the craziness that ensued. The Hollywood Click.
And Hollywood Jimmy taking.
Oh, yeah.
Barely taking over this company. I don't quite get it, but yeah. They haven't really revealed the whole like background of how this dude is like supposedly taking over the company. I think it has something to do with like the letter that was given to the other commissioner guy. I can't remember the guy's name, but the guy that was getting into it with Hollywood Jimmy the night before or the week before. So I think it has something to do with that, like that he's blackmailing him to control the company or something like that. It's kind of goofy, but yeah, the outset of this show was like basically like a company meeting with this Hollywood Jimmy character hamming it up in the ring in front of the old talent who looked like they someone pissed in their Cheerios or something.
He was holding court.
Yeah, it felt like a court. Yeah. It was like they were all just had the sad faces, like their world has been turned upside down. And there's gonna be more to come with this, I'm sure, in the weeks to come here in Hollywood Wrestling. This is just probably the start of some very fucking goofy storyline that we're going to see ahead. So,
hey man, you got to love it. And props to Memphis Wrestling for keeping tradition alive. You know, speaking of keeping tradition alive, let's turn over, Jed, and talk to me about NWA Power and what you saw from that show.
Yes. So 2 weeks worth, actually. I caught last Saturday's. And then just right before we came on tonight, I got a chance to check out today's episode that was on Comet. So we are now done with the Crockett Cup. The Crockett Cup concluded on this recent episode, today's episode. Just flash forwarding back to last week's, they had the semifinals of the Crockett Cup, and that was the Titans of Calamity going over Mike Mondo and Slade, and then also the Country Gentlemen going over the Good Brothers. So that led to the finals on this episode, the Crockett Cup. They had David Crockett out there. They had Billy Corgan out there with the cup, all the pageantry to go with it as well. And sure shit, like I was kind of shooting out the gates with the first episode of Power and that big push to the Titans of Calamity, they sure as shit got the Crockett Cup this year.
Oh, shit.
So, yeah, they get the big push, 5 wins in this tournament, 2 first initial wild card matches that they had back-to-back. That led them into the last slot in the Crockett Cup, the 16th seed. And then they basically, more or less, match-to-match, dominated and borderline, in some cases, squashed talent to just look strong as hell coming out of the gates from the Crockett Cup. And I would fully expect an NWA World Tag title run up next because they do get a title shot. And they also already had beaten the NWA tag champs in this tournament, I think in their 3rd match. So all in all, I think it's looking like, yeah, the Titans of Calamity are going to be moving on into a bigger role in the NWA. They are the All Japan tag team champions as well. So really nice partnership. I think that Billy Corgan's trying to, you know, segue and put together with this team in All Japan. So who knows, maybe we'll see other international talents from All Japan coming up here.
Hell yeah, man.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. And, you know, I think that is a very smart thing for them to do is, you know, if they are going to push the Titans of Calamity, just go ahead and strap the rocket to their backs and just make them look like absolute killers. I know that when you first talked about NWA Power and talked about those guys, You said that they did a great job of establishing that. Mm-hmm. It's good that they didn't, you know, hot cold them and they continued that push. Hopefully it's the start of more things to come, like what you were saying, and even more of a talent exchange.
Yeah, they were very consistent with their push and still are. And I think there's a reason, like you said too, is they wanted to develop a partnership. They want to get more international talent in. And I say, great, you know, I think this is the start of something that could be something bigger down the road. Also, I have to say that this last episode was probably, of all the episodes they've had so far on Common, I think there's been 5 now, this was probably the best one of the bunch. We also had an NWA World title match, Anything Goes, on this card with a Thrillbilly, Silas Mason, who's the NWA champion, against Brian Idol. These guys have had apparently a feud that's been going on for a while. Brian Idol can't get the big win. He did not get the win on this one either, but this was a really competitive physical match. They brawled all over the arena. They were literally at the top of the arena brawling, and Silas Mason got thrown down a carousel of steps, so there was some pretty wild spots in it. I enjoyed the match. Kerry Morton also did basically like a heel turn on the rest of his team members of Silas Mason. Yeah, he turned along with Ricky Morton, who joined him. So they are breaking away from the Southern Six faction and doing their own thing, apparently, here in the NWA. So that was interesting. And then the previous week also, we had a cash-in of sorts on the women's side. So Natalia Markova was the NWA Women's Champion, and she had a match at the end of last episode and successfully defended her championship. However, that that big mountain of a woman who is the bodyguard of Tiffany Nieves, Greta. She came in the ring and raised hell on Natalia Markova after her win, killed her basically, knocked her the fuck out. And then out came Tiffany Nieves, who had a cash-in, like a Money in the Bank type of cash-in from winning the Battle Royal the week before, or the Gauntlet Battle Royal. So she could cash in at any time. She had Greta beat the shit out of her and basically stood on her, you know, on her chest with her foot, and that was it. She got the title. So Tiffany Nieves is the NWA Women's Champion as well. So lots of stuff going on in the NWA. I'm still in it. Bring it on, Power. You got me.
Hell yeah, dude. Yeah, absolutely. Just from what you're saying there, I know that I might have to check that out this week. Maybe check out the episode that just dropped today, you know, that kind of a thing. So.
It was definitely a good episode. If you're going to start with one, I'd say this week's was definitely one to watch.
Awesome. Yep. All right, let's turn the page a bit and let's talk about Awesome Championship Wrestling's Reckoning event. This show dropped on the 16th. And man, ooh, what a wide variety of talent on this show.
Yes.
Tons of names. And dude, there was a little something for everybody on this show.
Yes, it was truly a variety show of an event. This company thrives, I think, on that too. They really put out a lot of different genres on their shows. You're going to have women's matches. You're going to have some really wild brawls of matches. You're going to have some comedy in there. You're going to have some good technical wrestling. It is truly a variety show, like I said, with ACW. In the Mid-Hudson Civic Center in Poughkeepsie, New York, which all of us wrestling fans know, that place has some
history, brother.
So, yeah, a lot of history there. And I think basically they like every one of their shows is there. So that is their home base.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And I thought the production on this, there's been some ACW shows I've seen in the past that the production was questionable at best. The volume and the audio, like in the announcing, was like just overpowering. Some of the video production was lacking, but they've really changed that now. I thought this was very well produced and slick. And I thought, yeah, production wise, it was great. And just a hell of a card. Lot of matches, lot of surprises. There was like a five-way match with Flip Gordon, Hammerstone, Brian Cage, Mance Warner, and Matt Taven that I thought really stood out. I was like, okay. And I was happy to see Flip Gordon going over on that one too.
I was really pleasantly surprised. And you know, obviously seeing Brian Cage and Hammerstone get in there as early as they did, they started off that match. And seeing them just go at each other, two bulls just beating the shit out of each other. Yeah. You got to love it. And again, obviously local ties with both of those guys. They've both frequented FSW. So most definitely.
Absolutely. And, you know, seeing old ECW talent like Danny Doring out there, you know, that was cool. It's fun, you know.
I'm not going to lie. I popped for Super Bon Bon when it came on.
Oh, yeah. You know it, man. Yeah. Yep. Crowbar out there busting his ass. Sally Graziano on commentary. You know, so you have a lot of different ECW ties in this company. I also thought the Andrade and Richard Holiday match really was solid. Good stuff. And then with Ben Bishop all in the mix of that too. So
dude, Ben Bishop is very fucking good. I know that we've talked about him during the Mania Week shows and stuff like that, but he's good in the ring. He's got great size and he is hilarious. He's absolutely hilarious.
Yeah.
Which is a quality that quite frankly, you don't get all that often.
Right.
So why not showcase it when you can? Obviously, I understand what they're doing with him, what they're building with him. Totally get that. But if they push him, they could have something good with Ben Bishop. Mm-hmm. And you know, especially if you know things go south between he and Richard Holiday or whatever the situation is. But yeah, dude, Andrade versus Holiday, They gave them 20 minutes. They let these guys go at it. And it was a great match. Great match. Highly recommend seeking that one out, as well as that five-way scramble match. That was a number one contenders match for the ACW National Championship, too.
Yep. Yeah. And then I think they were setting something up with Cross for their next show as well. So there's all kinds of stuff they got on the horizon. And they had the main event was a cage match for the tag championships that was quite the deal. It basically didn't really have a finish to it. It was
no contest.
Yeah. It was double touchdown. And they were going to announce who won it. I don't know. My assumption was they were going to say, okay, they touched at the same time. Thus, the two competitors in the ring, whoever gets out of those, one of those two, winner, you know, goes from there. But they didn't even get to that point. From that point on, after the two touchdown and there was like a no finish, it just went into like pure chaos in this one. The crowd was unruly. This went on and on and on. There was a beatdown with one of the guys from, I think it was Vic Delicious or Hale Collins of the Now. I think it was Vic Delicious, was getting the living shit kicked out of him endlessly in this cage. All these baby faces came in, tried to get in. Even the wife of this competitor tried to come in. She got fucking in the mix of it a little bit. These guys were healing up. It was Dan Maff and I think the other guy was Sean Donovan. They were known as Sent to Slaughter. Yep. And Jesus Christ, these guys were just out of their fucking minds. And the crowd was egging them on too. Dude. And garbage being thrown. It was a thing. There was some shit going down after this match. It was a really weird way to end the pay-per-view, I thought. But there was a heat hook. There was definitely a heat hook at the end of this show where the crowd was losing their ever-loving minds at these guys. And obviously, we're going to see something like a bigger gimmick of some sort coming up with these two teams.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah, they definitely gave that ending angle plenty of time to breathe. So we'll see what the payoff is and where they go from here.
Yep.
But what we'll do now is just really quick, I want to talk a bit about WXM. Checked them out last week. I checked them out this week. And it's a solid hour of pro wrestling, man. It's very enjoyable. They do record shows in bulk. And it is an Indian promotion. So obviously right there, if you can see the graphic, in the foreground, the main event of this show was Raj the Maharaja, the former Jinder Mahal, defeating Fateh the Zamindar in an unsanctioned match. They actually played it up where they had all of the fans leave the arena, all of the personnel leave the arena, commentators leave the arena, so that the only people that were there were the referee and a training staff in the event of an injury. So the good old empty arena match returned.
Yeah.
It was a fun brawl. There were plenty of story beats and obviously plenty of hyperbole, as is the case that I've noticed with watching WXM. Everything taken up to 11. But elsewhere on this show, man, the WXM Tag Team Champions, Anthony Green and Balian Aki, defeated Kevin Malik and Zack Sabre Jr.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Yeah, dude. Zack Sabre Jr. doing things in WXM. And, you know, this was a fun match as well. This actually went longer than the unsanctioned match. But all four guys looked great in the ring. So Anthony Green and Balian Aki, American wrestling fans both know those guys. Oh, yeah. Obviously Zack Sabre Jr. If you're a wrestling fan, you know him. But I hadn't seen much out of Kevin Malik. But, dude, all four of these guys tore it up. If you have a Triller Plus subscription, they drop shows once a week. I'd say throw it into your rotation. It's 1 hour. It's very quick. It's an easy watch, and it's fun for sure.
Oh, man. Yeah, I'll have to give this a look, man. Is it usually on, like, the weekends they drop these, or is it during the week? Okay,
weekend. Yeah, so it actually dropped on the 16th.
Okay.
That's
like a Saturday, if I recall.
Yeah, it dropped it on Saturday. They, I believe, had another episode today that dropped. Yeah. Cool. So I'll check that out, and then obviously we'll talk about that next week.
Perfect.
Awesome. But now, Jed, let's talk a bit about OVW and Collision Course, bro. What stood out to you on this show?
Yeah, so OVW, man, I have to say, something's going on with OVW lately. The storylines have been more tight, more compelling. There has been some stuff at the top of the card that's been really fun, more than normal. There's been a lot of changing of the guards, and particularly on this show, had a whole lot of that. I guess the one big piece of this one was, surprisingly, to come out of this show was a new OVW heavyweight champion. Yeah, and Jay DeNiro. So okay. Jay DeNiro, prior to this Collision Course event, which was on last Sunday, they had OVW Rise the Thursday prior. And there was a storyline in that mat or on that show where Jay DeNiro was more interconnected to his family due to the former champion Dustin Jackson actually doing an angle on that show to lead into this Collision Course show, where he broke into Jay DeNiro's home and kind of took his family hostage. It was kind of a wild angle for OVW. And it led to this event and this match with Jay DeNiro and Dustin Jackson for their world championship. And sure as shit, Jay DeNiro, with his family at ringside, became the World Heavyweight Champion, beat Dustin Jackson, thanks to, of all people, JBL doing a run-in on this fucking match. Yes, JBL showed up. And he took out Dustin Jackson, as they have something that they've been brewing in OVW with those guys. That's actually leading to a tag match coming up in a few weeks on OVW TV with JBL and Dustin Jackson and mystery partners on each side of the tag team. So you can speculate a plenty on maybe who JBL is bringing in as his tag partner. I'm wondering if it's Ron Simmons. We'll see what happens.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, it could be a reunion of the APA for one night only. We'll see.
Hey, man.
So that's set up for OVW's 1400th episode, which is coming up on June 11th. That's their next big show. Also on Collision Course, there was an unmasking of a masked wrestler. That was actually in the main event for the United States Championship with Superior Tony Evans against Star Rider. And a really good match. I would say go out of your way to watch this match and that world championship match on Collision Course. They were both great. Star Rider came so very close so many times in this match. And then they booked it how maybe in some other eras of wrestling, you'd see this maybe in the Dusty Rhodes era, where the heel brings in the brass knucks and he goes to town with the brass knucks. Well, they start fighting. The brass knucks get out. The babyface picks up the brass knucks. The referee is down in this whole situation. By the way, two refs took bumps in this match. They were both down. But Star Rider grabs the brass knucks, knocks out Tony Evans. You think justice is served. Babyface got his revenge. And everything is good in the world. Star Rider is going to get the United States Championship. Only thing was, one of the referees was just starting to get up at that time, saw what happened, disqualified Star Rider.
Oh, shit.
Behind, and sure enough, Star Rider had to lose his mask.
On a DQ.
On a DQ.
All right.
Yeah, it was a controversial finish for sure. He unmasked, and then the following on Rise on Thursday, he has announced his name is now Austin Riker. So he's moving forward there. They're going to still give him a push. I think he's going to eventually beat Tony Evans. because that storyline is still active. But really good heat in that match, really good near falls, back and forth, lots of ups and downs and roller coaster effects in that match. And then finally on Collision Course as well, we had Stephen Steele go over Cal Hero. So this feud is still brewing. This was a hell of a match too. I really enjoyed this match. Both guys brought it 110% in the match. Cal Hero almost beat Stephen Steele, but he got his foot on the rope. Stephen Steele did, for a very close near fall. They went back and forth a little bit. Stephen Steele then got one in on Cal Hero, and Cal Hero was near the ropes, put his foot under the ropes. Referee did not see that, and Stephen Steele went over. Didn't really cheat to win or anything like that, but it was more of a mistake on the referee's part. Mm-hmm. So this feud is continuing. They were getting into all kinds of shit the following Thursday, this past Thursday on OVW Rise as well. So that feud will continue, and we're moving forward with more stuff with Stephen Steele and Cal Hero, and probably the best feud storyline program right now going on weekly on OVW.
Awesome, man. Yeah, yeah, definitely. OVW has been doing some really good things. Shout out to Al Snow. Yes. And everybody involved in creative over there. I've seen a lot of discourse online saying that they're doing some great things in creative, and you just echoed that same point. So
yeah, they're turning it up. Yeah, they're turning it up a notch, and they're all building to, like I said, their 1400th weekly episode of OVW coming up on June 11th, where they're really trying to put a lot of stuff out there. And like I said, the one big match that they've announced so far is JBL coming in for a match with a mystery tag partner against Dustin Jackson and somebody else to be determined. And I would imagine Stephen Steele and Cal Hero are going to have another match on that show. And who knows what else?
Absolutely, man. All right. Well, let's turn our attention to 1FW. And this was, I believe, the last of the episodes that they recorded as part of their Rumble in Rome mega taping that they did. And this episode actually featured some pretty interesting stuff. We had, in a one-hour episode, we had a women's title change as Angelica Risk defeated Remy Reed to win the 1FW Women's Championship. And also, they had a steel cage match, but it was an eight-man tag match, and it basically followed War Games rules. So it was Team Anderson, which consisted of Billy Gunn, Brady Booker, Brock Anderson, and Tyler Shoop. Arn Anderson was out there at ringside, and they defeated the superstars, Jimmy Wild, Nikki Eight, and Tommy Mars, and the 1FW heavyweight champion, Brady Pierce. So Brady Booker was the one who scored the pinfall. So obviously it looks like as if they're going to be, you know, pushing for a Brady Booker versus Brady Pierce matchup. Yeah, excellent stuff in this match from all eight guys. And, you know, I think that it's very telling that people like Brock Anderson. He was somebody who you really didn't think of too much in AEW, but being on a bit of a smaller stage has allowed him to work on his character, has allowed to work on his visuals, even his standard in-ring work. And it's definitely paying off. So props to Brock for the efforts that it's noticeable that he's put in. Nice. And dude, Billy Gunn, for being the age that he is, he's still doing his thing. Yeah. Obviously, he's not, you know, Mr. Ass from the Attitude Era in terms of his in-ring work, but he's doing all right, bro. He could still go, which is considerable.
No doubt, man. Yeah, he's still got it. He's still got it, and the crowd still loves him. Yeah, considering his age and how long he's been in the business, his athleticism is still there.
Unreal.
And a little note about this promotion I had just heard just the last few days. Apparently, they're going to be also on the My AEW app.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they're going to be streaming their episodes. Currently, you can watch them on Triller. As we know, AEW and Triller had their falling out. And as a result, I'm not sure if they're going to, if 1FW is going to continue to put their episodes on Triller, but they will be available on the My AEW app going forward. So it's just another added bonus. And again, the connection's definitely there. 1FW is QT Marshall's promotion. So it just makes sense for them to go under the My AEW umbrella.
Yeah, just more visibility for them too. I mean, I can see them staying on both platforms just for more visibility purposes. I guess I haven't seen, but I wouldn't be shocked if they branch out on YouTube as well and maybe drop some of these episodes just to get themselves out as many avenues as they can.
Absolutely, man. So next, let's talk about Juggalo Championship Wrestling and the Assault.
Hell yeah. Columbus, Ohio was being in the middle of a straight-up assault on this show.
Yeah, man.
Wow. Yeah, live episode. I watched it live. I already mentioned this to you. There was some significant production issues live watching it. The audio was struggling. The video was fine, but they were having troubles with the audio portion. Sometimes there was no audio. Sometimes there was reverberation in the audio. It was like just a mess for a while. But fortunately, they did clean it up and then redrop the episode on their YouTube from start to finish then. So there was no issues if you didn't watch it live. But it was, man, some surprises for sure.
Yeah.
Some twists and turns. I say this every week, like a cliche with this fucking show, but where do we start? Should we start from the beginning or should we start at the most crazy, absurd shit?
We might as well just start at the top and work down, you know what I mean? Yeah. Obviously, we started off with the J-Rod and Alice Crowley match and, you know, very solid in ring between these two. I think J-Rod is doing exactly what she needs to do. She is in so many different promotions right now. And she's riding that American Gladiators buzz.
Yes.
And it good for her and good for these promotions for actually taking advantage of it. Mm-hmm. And she looks the part, you know, she's getting better and better. She's still new to the business, but relatively speaking, but you know, she continues to get better and that's really all that you can ever ask. Obviously there was a bit of a referee decision reversal as, there was some interference. J-Rod gets laid out. Alice Crowley picks up the win, but the extremely rare use of instant replay happened and the referee's decision was reversed.
Yeah.
So J-Rod retained the title via DQ.
I was surprised. I
was just left with what the fuck.
What? Like the promotion that, I mean, most matches have no fucking rules and they do whatever the fuck they want. And all of a sudden, then this one, of all of them.
I mean, for the love of God, their tag team champion's finisher is that he pours Everclear on his fist, lights it on fire, and hits his opponent.
I know, and yet that's, hey, you can beat him on that finish. Yeah, there's no issue with that. So,
yeah.
Yeah, so J-Rod's still the champion. They did the full-on dusty finish on this one.
Oh, yeah, completely dusty finish, bro.
Yeah, you thought, okay, she's got the belt. She's holding the belt up. It went on for a while. There was some hubbub in the ring. Then refs came out. They talked about how Sophia Rose interfered and costed J-Rod the match, and they reversed it, like you said, and J-Rod got the belt back. How about it?
Craziness, man. Craziness.
Yeah.
But I did have to laugh at they're really gonna push Matt Cross and Shane Mercer as future endeavors, aren't they?
They sure are. Yeah, they're going deep on it.
They made these guys look like two fucking killers.
Yeah.
As they destroyed Jabba City. I mean, Choppa City.
Killed them.
And, oh my God, dude. Yeah,
they just straight killed them. Yeah, it was Squash City for sure. And then I guess if we're going in order, you know, of absurd, crazy shit in the show, the next absurdness was the whole thing on this episode between the ring announcer, the backstage announcer, Matt Davis and Facade.
I was going to let you talk about that one because I'm lost. I'm new to the show, so I didn't know if these guys had history or what the deal was.
Not really. I mean, there's been just recently some back chatter with both of them. I believe Matt Davis has had some history getting it into with other competitors before, so this isn't just the first time. However, this really stood out on this show. They kept going back to it a little bit in vignettes in between the matches. So it definitely continued often on this show. And Mac Davis even like interfered in a match involving Facade as well. Yeah. So there was a lot going on.
Yeah, there were two matches that basically ended in a DQ.
Yeah.
To start the show.
I know. It's so unorthodox and so unlike what I'm used to with this show is where there's like non-finishes. You know, usually it's pretty clear when there's something going on in a match, even if it's crazy, you know, run-in city and everything, there's still a finish.
Yes.
Not on this show. There was a lot of throwing shit on the wall and seeing what sticks, I think, a little bit on this one. So,
yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, speaking of throwing things at the wall, there's this week was the first week in the 4 weeks of hell for Caleb Konley.
Yeah.
As Violent J has said that he is going to give Caleb Konley four mystery opponents, not from JCW. And this week, it just so happened to be the Soul Taker.
I haven't seen him in a while, man.
No shit, dude. Always good to see the Soul Taker.
Yeah. I mean, I think the Soul Taker has had some history with cocaine, which is no surprise. I mean, Undertaker and Kane, Soul Taker and cocaine, you know. So fun little match, though, with Soul Taker and Caleb Konley. We got three more weeks of this. Random outside talent from who knows the fuck where.
As evidence on this show.
Yeah, I expect nothing but absurdity.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
And, you know, one other thing that I did like that they did as the main event on this show was they laid out a stipulation for a best of three series between Freya the Slayer, somebody from OVW, and Giselle Shaw. Who obviously was in TNA, MLP. So Giselle picked up the win in the first match of this best of three, but the stipulation is whoever wins the best of three wins a JCW contract. So I like when companies do this type of a storyline where you have 1v1 and the winner gets a contract or a, you know, whatever the situation might be. Instead of it just being, you know, two outside names that, you know, have no business being in the company. Now it adds some stakes to it and it makes sense. And I'm going to let you talk about that main event segment.
did you
notice, by the way, on this graphic at the top right, it actually says who is the Batman? And we damn sure found out who the Batman was.
Yeah, the Batman is, of all people, the mystery opponent to Jeeves in the main event. Yep, he's going back in the ring, folks. Vince Russo was the Batman.
Oh, yeah.
Here we go. Yep, but here we go again. He came out of his Giants jersey, and that seemed to be the clue of...
He was rocking the Linscombe, and I knew it. I saw that shit. I was the same way. I was like, oh, damn.
Here we go.
And he was making a point of, like, messing with his bat. I was like, okay.
Sure. All right. Yep. And, yeah, he just beat the shit out of Jeeves. That was pretty much your main event, essentially. Vince Russo beating up Jeeves with a baseball bat. And there you go.
Violent J walked out there and looked at him very sternly.
Right. So I don't know if they're going to actually do a Vince Russo and Violent J match. I would say if you go that route,
that's got to happen at the Gathering.
Yeah, probably at the Gathering, and probably in a tag match scenario or something like that. Maybe. I don't know if you
Caleb, Vince and Caleb against ICP.
Yeah, get Shaggy back. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And, so there are talks that Shaggy is completely messed up and he can't bump. If he can't, then obviously, you know, there are so many names that they could pull from. Oh. But I definitely like that idea of it being a tag match for sure.
Yep. Yeah, they're definitely going with it. Like you said, I think Gathering the Juggalos timeline wise sounds like that'd be about the right place and right time to do it. So why the fuck not? You know?
Absolutely, man. And then last but most certainly not least, let's talk about our main event.
Oh yeah.
House of Glory waging war. This show dropped on the 22nd. Mm-hmm. So a very new and fresh show. Mm-hmm. You got a Triller Plus membership. Do yourself a favor. Go watch this show. Mm-hmm. It all got started quick, fast, and in a hurry. Mm-hmm. Amazing Red versus AEW TNT champion Kevin Knight.
Yeah, man. Boy. Dude.
Boy.
Yeah. Awesome match. Awesome so opener. Good. This seems to be like the theme with HOG this year is we're going to get Amazing Red in a showcase match against one of the best pure in-ring talents right now going in the company here, there, or everywhere. Yeah. I mean, we've seen it. Mike Bailey, Kevin Knight, various different big talents. I almost feel like when I was watching this match and at the end of this match, I almost thought to myself, is Amazing Red doing a retirement tour or what's going on here? Because it feels like it.
I don't want to think that, but it definitely does smell of that for sure.
It feels like it could be, or at least building to that. I don't know, but he's not winning a lot of these matches either. So
he's putting over the next generation. Right. And that's definitely important. And, you know, I think that it definitely needs to be said, the Amazing Red and Bandido match over WrestleMania weekend was absolutely fantastic. So Amazing Red at his age going out there, putting out banger after banger after banger is awesome. And we should not expect anything less from the Amazing Red because he is amazing.
He sure is. Yeah, he can still go. And man, this was just, I think of all of the matches that Red has had this year that we were mentioning, this might've been the best one.
It was.
Yeah. The crowd was just totally involved in it. Kevin Knight was doing great in his role. I didn't feel like he wasn't going full heel by
any. He didn't go full throttle, but dude is so good, man.
Yeah.
He's so good.
Dude, I mean, you can just tell the future's bright for Kevin Knight, man. Holy shit. You just wait, buddy. Well, let's see where he's at the end of the year even. I think we're going to be really surprised where Kevin Knight's going. So that was just the start of the show.
That was match one.
Yeah.
Speaking of AEW, we had Lena Cross defeating Shotzi Blackheart, the HOG Women's Champion, after she was laid out in the back by a mystery woman. They speculated that it might be Steph DeLander. And speaking of, that's another person who probably the best thing to ever happen in her career was being let loose by WWE.
Yeah.
Because Steph has done amazing things, not just in TNA, but all across the independent scene. Doesn't matter the promotion. She is willing to put in the work and get it done. Props to her for everything that she's done. But she did maybe cost Shotzi, this match. It was supposed to be a title match. And then after the attack on Shotzi, they made it no non-title. So I'm sure that they'll run that back at some other point. Shotzi can get her win back over Lena Cross.
Yep. God damn, Lena Cross looked great in this match.
So good. So fucking good, dude.
I didn't see many of her singles matches, so this really caught my attention.
Oh, yeah.
She was phenomenal in this match. And once again, workhorse of the year so far, Shotzi Blackheart. I mean, my God, she just rolling through indies like sliced butter, man, like one after the next, you know.
Bro, keep in mind, she just did the fucking four nights
at
WSW in Australia.
Right. And then like 3 or 4 days later, she did this show.
Unreal, wow, man.
Traveling.
Shotzi is fucking killing it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. She's traveling all across the world. Coast to coast, border to border, continent to continent, man. She's getting out there and putting her name out there, and God bless her. She's doing great.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, another standout match on this show was the House of Glory Cruiserweight Championship as Darren Richardson defeated Blackheart Leo Rush. And we're seeing that metamorphosis of Leo, and he's getting stronger. But he did come up just a bit short on this occasion. Yep. But, dude, Leo is this gimmick and this character is so good. And I can't wait to see how audiences are going to react when it gets to a national and worldwide television audience.
Yeah.
That being said, Darren Richardson has had some standout performances, and this match was no exception. Excellent work by both of these guys.
Yep, they both brought it for sure for that Cruiserweight Championship. Also wanted to mention the Pumi Nakato.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Dude, what a week that guy had. So he was on the Carano Rousey card.
Mm-hmm.
And a controversial finish. He didn't win, but it was kind of a weird finish. It was like he basically should have been given more of a chance, at least for the judge's decision. We won't get into that. It's a whole different story in a different day. But he showed out on that show, on that MVP MMA show on Netflix. He showed out in this match on House of Glory against Raheem Royale. And then at the finish of that, then had another challenge come in from Angel Dokies or something along those lines. I wasn't familiar with that talent, but he beat the fuck out of him real quick, and that was that.
That match was like 15 seconds.
And then took out that kind of wacky manager is to on top of it, just to put a cherry on that sundae. So
absolutely.
Yeah, he stood.
I gotta say it too, man. Zilla Fatu. He looked like $1 million on this show, continues to look fantastic. As he defeated Ken Broadway, and who outside of a slip at the end of the match on a moonsault looked pretty gnarly. He had a very solid match as well. So hopefully he's okay with that. He came up bleeding from the eye. So his head definitely made contact with the mat. Didn't quite get a full rotation on that moonsault. Yeah. Zilla got right back up and kind of no-sold it, hit the spike, 1-2-3, to retain that Crown Jewel Championship.
Yep. Very solid match. Crowd loves Zilla, man.
Oh, dude.
He is just continuing to get more and more over. Crowds, especially, I mean, this is like HOG's home base in Queens. Yeah. They love Zilla Fatu, and they hate Charles Mason.
Yes, they do.
That was yet another fun match with, oh my God, here was another example of where I thought, by God, they are going to switch the title here.
I thought so too.
Yeah, to Sweet
Cheeks. Fucking Sweet Cheeks.
Of all people, yeah. I thought, no fucking way is this happening. And then they got me hooked. I thought for sure one of those last two or three near falls were going to be the finish. It was like the way they were laying that match out. I just thought, oh my fucking God. But then sure enough, near the end, boom, Mason with the win.
Charles Mason is on a great run right now. An absolutely great run. Obviously he's playing his character in a very excellent way.
Yep.
That dude is just firing on all cylinders right now, and he's getting a reaction, which is the most important thing. Like you said, people fucking hated this guy. They were chanting, anti-Charles Mason chants the entire match.
Yeah.
And, they were cheering for Sweet Cheeks Joey Silver. And, man, it's a tale as old as time. the beloved babyface that is valiant in his quest, but comes up just short.
Just short, and just that much. Yeah.
Yeah. It was excellently done.
Yeah. Very entertaining. Very entertaining. Speaking of another talent that the crowd was definitely hating on was Midas Black.
Yeah.
After officially turning on Jay Lyon, and the main event is no longer officially on this show. They ran an angle and a promo that solidified it essentially. And there was a lot of heat in that brawl, and there was a lot of hating for Midas Black as he was walking back up that aisle after turning on Jay Lyon and stabbing him in the back with the chair, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, they've planted seeds for this for a while now, just looking back at it. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be interesting to see how both guys' trajectory is. Yeah. I think you do have something with both guys. They both bring something to the table, and they both bring different things to the table. Realistically, I think that this could be one of the rare instances where when a tag team splits, yes, the guys are going to feud, absolutely. But after that, I could see both guys excelling as singles for sure.
Yeah. Yep. No question about it. And this is going to be a heated program.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to probably, it reminds me a little bit, you know, of the days of Ring of Honor where Kevin Steen turned on El Generico. Felt a lot like that, you know? I had that same energy. So we'll see how that plays out in future matches with these guys. But yeah, the main event are no longer.
So, oh yeah.
Yeah. And how about that main event? Speaking of
the main event, let's talk about two tag teams that tore the house down and capped off this show with an excellent, excellent match, providing a great bookend to this show as the Hardys defeated these Super Smash Brothers. Yes, Evil Uno and Stu Grayson reuniting and coming up just short for the HOG Tag Team Championships. And, dude, the Hardys, yeah, they are continuing to do their thing. Yep. They've found a second home in HOG, man.
Sure have, man. They are just fitting like a glove in here. So I wonder who will be the team to take them out. I don't see anybody on the horizon. It feels like there's a bit of a nostalgia wave going along here. Yes. I mean, you get Super Smash Brothers back together. We haven't seen them since AEW, you know, whenever Stu Grayson left.
Yeah.
It's been a while. So it was fun to see them back in there. It was just a real treat to see these guys working in there against the Hardys. Like I said, we'll see. Maybe they'll have some other tag teams from history's past being brought back together to work against the Hardys and Dream match scenarios. I don't know if that's kind of the angle they're going to go with, but we'll see where they go moving forward.
That would be dope. That would be really dope if they do something like that.
Yeah. We'll see what happens. Right. Yeah.
So, let's talk a bit about Future Stars of Wrestling and what's next on the horizon for FSW as we bring it back local. And FSW High Octane Money to Burn is going to come to you live on Sunday, May 31st at 5 p.m. right on the Title Match Network or live from the FSW Arena. And let's talk about some of the matches that you could expect on a High Octane, huh? Let's get some breaking news, if you will. Your FSW Women's Championship will be on the line as Brittany Brooks defends her title against Zamaya, which should be a barn burner of a match. And then FSW is setting the table for their Cash in the Case event, which is going to be coming up very soon. And we've got some qualifiers and some of these matches, Jed, I think that you're going to pop for, I'd say a couple of these.
All right.
So up first, we've got BYP, Brody Young Prodigy versus Nick Zander. There you go. Right out of the gate. So that's going to be an excellent match. Both of these guys are very, very good. Elsewhere, we've got Ice Williams, the former WWE ID talent himself, taking on Kevin Koa in a qualifier match. So that should be a hard-hitting match for sure. Mm-hmm. Elsewhere, we've got Lights, Camera, Factions, Watson versus Bryce Saturn. So could be some interesting stuff if we get Watson in there and, you know, some of the other individuals in this match as well. Mm-hmm. Also in a qualifier match, we have Dante King versus Luke Curtis. So, yeah, should be very good there. And again, obviously, as I had mentioned, Dante King has done a lot of excellent things, not just in FSW, but we saw him during Mania Week in a couple of shows, one at Container Park.
Yep.
So, yeah, absolutely. And Luke Curtis is an excellent in-ring worker as well. So those guys should battle it out. Elsewhere on the show, we got Mariachi Montana versus the Fight Club in what should be another hard-hitting tag match. And I mentioned them earlier. My boys, I'll go ahead and say it. My boys, Live Danger taking on the Chingon Cartel and Young Money in a three-way tag match. Not to mention the FSW heavyweight champion will be in the building. Tyler Bateman will be there at the FSW arena on May 31st, 5 p.m. Whoa. If you can't be there live, check it out live on the Title Match Network, man.
Awesome.
Yeah. So it should be a very, very solid show. So, Jed, before we wrap up, tell the people where they can find you and let's get some final thoughts.
Absolutely. Red Jed's Wrestling Rants, baby. Check it out on YouTube, Super Red Jed, or search for Red Jed's Wrestling Rants. All the content you can fucking want right then and right there. Old rants, plenty of clips from live events, high spots, highlights, finishes, entrances, you name it, they're there. And also, I just want to promote and push that you and I are going to be coming up here doing a hell of a big rant and review on Double or Nothing coming up after the event, probably on Monday.
Monday. Yes, for those of you that are checking this out live, we're going to be right here where you're watching us right now, Monday night. As we do a wrap-up and a bit of a rant on AEW Double or Nothing, which obviously is coming your way Sunday the 24th. We will be live on Monday the 25th as we recap and rant on Double or Nothing in what should be a pretty fucking great show, man. Not to jinx it, but that card is looking stacked.
It really is. Yeah. And in a cool outdoor arena. I mean, everything is aligned for this show to really bring the fucking shit.
Hell yeah, man. And really quick, I just want to say thank you to everybody for hanging out with us tonight. Thank you for liking, sharing, subscribing, doing all the stuff that you guys do. We appreciate each and every one of you. Also, a very special thank you to all the brave men and women serving this country, whether you're doing it on lands foreign or domestic. Thank you for doing what you do so that we can do what we love to do. And last but not least, repsports.com, REPPsports.com. Go there for all your pre-workout, weight loss, and general energy needs. Again, repsports.com. Use promo code Vegas at checkout and save yourself 10%. Dude,
what a week.
This marathon is over.
Indeed.
But you know what? It don't stop, bro. We just keep on going.
Great. Any of you have a great time tonight. Yeah.
With that, everybody, thank you for hanging out. We will we'll do it all again next week. Till then, happy wrestling.
Rolling up the strip under neon lights. Podcast mic is glowing in the desert night. Matt and Michael's leading with the swagger tight. Sin City Steve right by his side. All right. Rob Butcher, Larry, dropping truths, no fear. Broadcasting stories, make it loud and clear. From the Fremont edges to the Bellagio sphere. These bad boys rule, let me make that clear. Vegas bad boys, tearing up the scene.
To Matt Michaels and the Vegas Boys of Podcasting, this is John Cena saying thank you so much.